Well, if you're up and around and outside tonight between, at six or so and maybe 9 o'clock tonight, thereabouts, 7 to 9, you're going to have a chance to experience a total eclipse of the moon. Jim Lattis, director of the UW-Madison Space Place, he's a faculty associate in the UW-Madison Department of Astronomy, one of our guests today, and the other, Tom Hall of Eagle Optics. He's an optics specialist with Eagle Optics of Middleton, and I'm really pleased to have these guys back. They come by every so often to talk about what's going on in space, and seemed like the perfect time to have them here to talk about what we're going to see here in Wisconsin. Jim, welcome.
Great to be here, Larry.
Tom, nice to have you back, too.
Always nice to be here, Larry.
And I expect you guys are going to be outside tonight.
As much as I can stand, yeah. Well, we have an event at Space Place, so we'll be set up out there outside of Space Place and observing the lunar eclipse and going in to warm up and then coming back out.
Going back out again, and you'll have a good place to view it from there. And
yeah, we have a nice view off to the east from right out in front of Space Place there on South Park Street, and so we'll observe there. We might the moon gets higher, we might move up to our observing deck, but we'll be observing.
And Tom Hall, you going to have some optics out there and looking, or are you just going to just look?
You bet. Well, I'll have my binoculars out at least, and I'm not sure how much I can get my children to hang on to something in this cold. We'll find out tonight.
Well, yeah, it's supposed to be like 13 below or something like that tonight.
Who needs the numbers?
Yeah. But it's going to be fun to talk about. And let me give the number, by the way. If you'd like to join in with a question about space, about the eclipse, give us a call, the number 1-800-642-1234, or if you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And just sort of background again, Jim, we can talk about a lunar eclipse, what are lunar eclipses and so forth.
Sure. Well, of course, this is the kind of thing, this is a really great astronomical event because you don't need any special equipment to look at it, and you don't need any special instructions to find the moon. Everybody knows what it looks like. You just look for it, and there it is. And in a case like this, it's pretty convenient, too, except for our cold temperatures. You're just going to look off to the east there, and from about 6:30 or so, 6:35 is the technical beginning of the eclipse, but you don't see much. That's the earliest stages of the eclipse when the moon is moving into what we call the penumbra, which is partial shadow of the Earth, and it doesn't darken the moon very much. But the inner part of the Earth's shadow, the shadow that the planet Earth casts directly opposite the sun, of course, the darkest part is called the umbra, and when the moon crosses into the umbra, this is the full moon, of course, we suddenly see a dark notch out of the edge of the moon as it moves into the umbra, and that will happen right about 7:43. So that's probably the most interesting time of the eclipse, so a little bit before 7:43, say 7:30 or so. Actually, by 7:30, even the penumbral eclipse, there'll be a noticeable darkening of the moon from what it was at about 6:30. Then about 7:30, things will start getting real interesting, and from there on until the middle of the eclipse, which is about 9:26, so not quite 9:30. So 7:30 to 9:30 is sort of the best period of time to be looking for the moon crossing into the Earth's shadow.
Boy, I remember this occurred once a while back. I lived in another place, and it occurred in the summer, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and it was a warm night. It was a Sunday. I remember that Sunday night, and I'm out there on the street looking up, and then I looked up and down the street, and I think every household in our neighborhood had emptied out. Everybody was standing outside watching, and it was really a lot of fun.
They're great. Just because you don't need the equipment. Now, equipment is fine if you've got, like Tom said, his binoculars or a telescope. It's fun to watch the moon doing this. And tonight, there's actually some other interesting objects right up there near the moon as well for your telescope. Saturn will be very close to the full moon, a little bit to its east, and a little bit to its west will be the bright star Regulus. So those three objects, the fully eclipsed moon and those two bright objects there, are going to be forming sort of a broad triangle in the sky. And Saturn is approaching a really good viewing period. So if you've got a small telescope, now would be a good time to try it out on Saturn.
Get out there and give it a try. Tom in Stoughton is online, so let's go to Tom. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just had a question. Is there an exact 19-year cycle to a solar or lunar eclipse? Does it repeat regularly?
That's a good question. There is a cycle, and the 19 years is approximate. It's closer to 18 and two-thirds years or something along that line. We don't get a lunar eclipse or a solar eclipse at every full moon or new moon. We have solar eclipses, of course, at new moon when the moon moves in front of the sun, as seen from the Earth, and blots out the sun in the sky partially or totally. And we get a lunar eclipse at full moon when the moon is on the far side of the Earth from the sun and passes through the Earth's shadow. But that doesn't happen at every new moon and every full moon because the moon's orbit is tipped with respect to the Earth's orbit. So a lot of times, most of the time, at full moon or at new moon, the moon is either north or south of the sun, or at full moon, it's north or south of the Earth's shadow. The two planes have to line up, or I should say the intersection of the two planes has to line up with the line from the Earth to the sun, and that's called the line of nodes. So you can only have an eclipse at the nodes. So about every 6 months, which is when the nodes line up, there's the possibility of a lunar or solar eclipse somewhere on the Earth. And in fact, usually we have one of each of various types. But just every 6 months or so. But that line, actually the moon's orbit rotates, the plane of its orbit rotates, which moves the nodes. And so we don't have an exact six-month repetition period, but it's a little bit different. And the orbit itself, they call it precessing, the plane of the orbit precesses about 18 and two-thirds years, and then you have an eclipse cycle, and you see 18 and two-thirds years later, you will see a similar lunar and or solar eclipse to the one you saw before. But because that's not an even number of years,
it's thrown off.
Yeah,
it's
right.
It's not at the same. It's not always in February.
Exactly right.
Okay. Thank you, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it. Mike in Menominee Falls, it's your turn. Hi, Mike. Mike, are you there? Well, let's see. We'll hold on and see if he comes back to us. But we did have a question. Somebody emailed in. When the Defense Department tries to shoot down the incoming satellite, will that be visible with the telescope or binoculars, Tom Hall?
Well, to my understanding, it won't be from North America because they're doing it out in the Pacific. It'll be out west of the Hawaiian Islands, so no, it's going to be over the curvature of the Earth. And evidently, it's a three-stage missile that they're shooting up towards this. It's not an exploding warhead. It's essentially just a bullet, if you will, a 40-pound payload that they're going to try to strike this satellite with, or more properly, from what they were describing, the satellite plows into the bullet. The satellite's moving much faster than what they're going to try to shoot it down with. Won't be visible from Earth unless some of the pieces crack up enough that we might get slight showers from the pieces if they manage to hit it.
I guess that depends on how fast the orbits of the piece of the resulting pieces degrade. Yeah.
So this is like a bullet. So it's not a. Is it a guided bullet or?
It is guided, and evidently the reason they want to try to do it over the Pacific, it's heat seeking. It uses infrared for its targeting. And they're hoping, since this satellite is dead, doesn't have any power, they can't fire rockets on it or anything, that the sun will heat it up enough that they can target it with their infrared. That's their hope. and again, it's traveling at 17,000 miles an hour. The bullet, if you will, the plug itself, again, weighing 40 pounds or something, travels around 7,000 miles an hour, so the combined speed at impact will be 22,000 miles an hour.
Ooh!
So that's the reason they don't need it to explode. It'll disintegrate on impact.
Kinetic energy right there.
And that they're shooting it because they want it to disintegrate and not, or is it to test out the probably both?
Probably both would be my suspicion. They say that there's enough hydrazine fuel on board that it would present a danger, but anyone that you ask about reentry will say that will be one of the first things to go, perhaps. So
okay. So it's testing out that rifle that they're using to shoot at the, sort of, so to speak.
Certainly isn't going to hurt in that respect to test it, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see if we got Mike here. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what's your question?
My question was, a number of years ago during a full moon out west, I was viewing the moon with binoculars, and it looked like around the curve of the moon I could see mountain ranges. Very slight. It only happened one night for a couple hours. Was I, in fact, seeing the terrain of the moon from that angle? Do you understand my question?
Oh, sure. You can easily pick up, you know, the mountains on the edges of the moon with a good telescope at full moon. The reason a lot of people don't necessarily like to go right at full moon is you get a better sense of depth and more of a 3D effect when you're actually at one quarter moon or something. You see the shadowing of the mountains themselves right along the terminator itself. But yeah, if you get a good telescope and look along the edges, you should see structure. You're not going to see just necessarily a solid, smooth line. Is that what you were asking there?
Yeah.
Now,
I had one other question, too. Is it true that you can get a sunburn in like 3 seconds in the atmosphere away from Earth? I mean, if you have no suit on?
I don't know what the time is, but certainly if you're outside of the Earth's atmosphere, then the ultraviolet radiation isn't filtered at all.
You're going to get burned in a hurry.
Yeah, it's going to happen fast, so I'm sure that's true.
Yeah. All right, Mike, thank you for calling. Rosie in Sturgeon Bay, hello to you.
Hi, hello. I have a question not about the moon, but last Thursday evening, about 6:30, a bright object moved from the northwest to the southeast through Orion, and it was so beautiful. I don't think it was an airplane. Could that have been the space station?
It certainly could have been. In fact, it's almost surely a satellite that you saw.
It wasn't blinking. It was just a very intense, brighter than any star.
You know, there's a real good way to find out.
Okay.
That you can go to, there's a website that I'd like to recommend called heavensabove.com. So that's heavens-above.com.
Okay.
And if you go to that website, it specializes in calculating satellite passes for your location. Satellite visibilities are very specific to time and precise location.
Okay.
So you'll give it your location there any number of ways. I think it maybe even takes a zip code from you.
Well, I saw it up there in north central Wisconsin in Prentice where there was no other light pollution happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you'll have to tell it fairly exactly where you were to within preferably a few miles of your location. So if you can specify to the website where you were looking and when it was, or just the date, actually, just the day, it will tell you all the satellite passes that occurred that day. And so you can match up the one that was going the right direction at the right time, and you'll find out just what that was.
You'll know exactly what it was.
It was quite beautiful.
Yeah, I bet it was. It is fun to see the satellites, isn't it?
It really is. And some nights it looks like there's a lot of traffic. You go out there and there's...
they're all over the place.
You see a half dozen in half an hour, yeah.
Bob in Boulder Junction, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Well, hello there. We were out last evening enjoying the full moon, and we saw some five or six beams, and we weren't sure...
Beams as in B-E-A-M-S?
That's correct.
Okay.
Kind of like... five or six beams coming forth, and wanted to know what we were observing.
Now, this was coming from the moon, it seemed like?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. Beams from the moon.
Yeah, it was kind of at a different angle. We would just kind of see rays of beams coming.
Well, certainly it's you often see halos around the moon, and when the moon is close to full, you can see the lunar analog to what are called sundogs. Sometimes on a clear, usually in the winter, you can see they're called sundogs or parhelia, bright spots in the sky to the left and right of the sun, and caused by a layer of crystals scattering light back to you. And you can see a similar thing with the moon when the moon is bright, if the ice crystals are plentiful. But it would be my guess; it would be something like that.
Okay, and that would probably also account. It looked like at certain points. Like a glow around the moon. That would also refer to what you were talking about.
Right. It's all a question of the atmospheric conditions that you get that the moonlight is scattering through on its way to you. And so you can get various kinds of halos around the moon from the different types of scattering or reflection that different size particles, different altitudes of particles produce.
Okay, mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We'll get to Dan in Milwaukee next, but there's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. Talking astronomy, zeroing in a little bit on the eclipse, but we'll take any question relating to optics or relating to astronomy with our two guests, Jim Lattice and Tom Hall. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Pleased to have you with us here on the Ideas Net as we talk with Jim Lattice of the UW Space Place and Tom Hall of Eagle Optics in Middleton about the eclipse of the moon tonight and taking a look at the stars and answering your questions. So pleased to have you listening in, too. And Dan in Milwaukee has been waiting a little while, so let's go to Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hello and good morning.
Morning.
Hi, I have a question. I know that the moon revolves around the Earth every 28 or 29 days or so, and I know that it also rotates on its axis in such a way that that's why we only see one side of the moon. But I'm wondering what forces are at work that make that the case, and is that a likely situation with most planets and moons, or is that very unlikely?
You're quite right that the period of the moon's orbit around the Earth and the period of its rotation on its axis match, and so for that reason we only see the one side of the moon. What's going on there is that the tidal effect of the moon on the Earth, which a tidal effect is like a stretching effect of the gravity of one body on another. So the moon is slightly distorted because one side of the moon, of course, is closer to the Earth than the other side of the moon. So the gravity is stronger on that side. So the moon, if you will, is becomes sort of football-shaped with the long axis of the football pointing towards the Earth. Presumably in the early days, the moon rotated much faster, or at some other rate in any case, other than its orbital period, but that tidal bulge has a braking effect. It causes the rotational energy of the moon to be dissipated as heat as the crust is distorted.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, a body like that, when the tidal effect is strong enough, the body becomes tidally locked, they say, in its orbit. And the moon is locked. They also call that a gravitational resonance because it doesn't have to be one-to-one. In this case, it's one-to-one. That is, the period of the orbit and the period of the rotation are equal. But there are many, many other examples of gravitational locking that go on. For example, the planet Mercury is gravitationally locked to the sun because it's close enough to the sun that the tidal effect on Mercury owing to the sun has caused it to come into a 2-to-3 resonance with the sun. And there are many examples of that in the solar system as well. So that's where that comes from. But good point.
Amazing. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Today. Time for another contribution.
All right. Good for you, Dan. Thanks a lot for calling. Pete in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Pete.
Hi, how's it going, gentlemen?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, well, you know, I've always enjoyed this show. This is the first time I've actually felt compelled to call in. This last Saturday, it was about 9:30 at night, and I was standing outside the Franciscan Seminary here in La Crosse and just sort of looking off to the west, and I was with somebody. And he was facing me, I was facing the west. All of a sudden, I saw what appeared to be the biggest sort of shooting star I have ever seen. It was really over the top. I mean, I saw it, and I said something I probably shouldn't say outside a seminary. But it was so shocking how bright this thing was. The only way I can describe it is to say that, you know, when you watch a fireworks show, and at the very end when they let the really big one go and it's screaming, that's how big it looked. You know, it was at like a 45-degree angle, and I thought it looked like it burned out or dissipated. Luckily, the person caught the tail end of it. They thought that it disappeared behind the tree line. But I was just wondering, I actually called the news because I just had never, I've seen so many shooting stars, I've never seen anything like this. It looked like something out of a movie or something.
Well, how far across the sky did it move, and how long did it take to...
That was another thing. It was slow, you know, and it moved quite far. It seemed to get slightly smaller, which made me think that it was going away from me west, but it was at like a 45 kind of degree angle, and it was really slow and deliberate. Well, I mean, it was...
So did you see it for a total of a few seconds or a few minutes?
Yeah, certainly. Or? I would say 3 full seconds, and my friend caught the last second of it.
Mm. Okay.
This sounds almost like what a lot of observers will call your classic fireball. I mean, there are larger meteors that we will see, mm-hmm. This could be the size of, you know, a snowball.
Sure.
A lot of what we see are very tiny, as Jim has described to me in the past. They may be as small as grains of sand, but some of the larger ones will punch through, and they slow up, and they take a while to burn. And if they're not rock, you know, if they're made of some other material, ice, whatever, they can glow for some time.
Often leave a visible trail.
Yeah. Often leave a visible trail, exactly so. So you caught a classic one, it sounds like.
It was really spectacular. And another thing that impressed me so much is, you know, where I was seeing it, there was a lot of ambient light from the downtown area with all the snow we've had. And this thing was just in stark relief to all of the light coming from downtown.
Yeah,
so
great.
Well, thanks a lot. That's very interesting. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you calling, Pete. Very interesting. Mark in Greenfield, it's your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how you doing? I'm just calling to answer a question someone had. They saw something going through the sky last week, Thursday. It was the space shuttle connected to the space station. It was at 6:08 p.m. because I watched it. It was fantastic.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, appreciate the call. All right. We've got the answer to that question. Let's go to Bill in Oshkosh. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
It's a great show, as always. Question. Or experience, and then a question. We were finished hunting at nighttime on the Acoma Reservation, and we're driving north in the dark. I just missed a huge elk. And we looked to the left of the car. The moon had risen to our right. And there looked like this light on the ground. And it was moving, and it was arc-shaped. And we looked at it, and then we looked away, and then we looked again to our left, and indeed, it had moved. And the only thing we could conclude was like a rainbow. And I mentioned the elk only because it was beautiful compensation for not getting the elk. But it was absolutely, it was spectacular. And we thought it, because of the altitude of the mesa and there was rain farther to the west, you know, that it could have been ice crystals or vapor or something in the sky.
So this was in the day?
No, it was at nighttime.
It was at night.
But the moon was about 30 degrees off, 40 degrees off the horizon, off eastern horizon. Yeah.
And you were headed north.
That's correct.
And you saw the arc, did you say, in the sky or on the ground?
No, I was on the ground to the left, just like if you were flying in an airplane, you'd see the rainbow moving along.
Wow. I don't know what that would be unless you were getting maybe backscattering off of snow cover of the moonlight.
It was rock, and there was no snow.
Well, I guess you could get backscattering off of it depending on what kind of rock you had, too.
Could there have been icy crystals in the air?
That's what I was thinking of.
There you go. That would be my guess that you're getting, you know, and you're right, possibly. Just like a rainbow, you'd be 180 degrees from the moon itself. Is that how you're describing it?
Moon was slightly ahead of us and to the right, you know, wasn't it 90 degrees to our direction of travel and the maybe 80 degrees and the rainbow was slightly behind us and perfect 180 degree transect, I guess.
Cool sighting.
It was pretty extraordinary. Okay. Thank you guys.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thanks, Bill. Barb in Caledonia, Minnesota is up next. Hi, Barb.
Hi. Thanks for letting me know there's a lunar eclipse this evening. I had no idea.
Well, good for get out there and watch it.
There you go. I had a question about this astrological phenomenon that's going to be happening, this alignment with the equator and Sagittarius's arrow at the middle of the galaxy, you know, that points to the middle of the galaxy center, and it's going to be lining up with the equator.
With the Earth's equator?
Yes.
And when is that?
It's supposed to be happening sometime between 1992 and the year 2012.
Do you know what I'm speaking now of? You're telling us something we don't know.
Yeah, that's new. I'm not even sure what it means for Sagittarius to line up with the Earth's
equator.
Well, it's
the pointer. Sagittarius points to the center of the universe, our galaxy. His arrow actually points to the center of the galaxy, and then it's going to line up with the equator. So that'll be our center of our galaxy lining up with the equator to make a perfect parallel cross. And I was wondering what's going to happen. It only happens every 13,000 years, and I was wondering if you knew anything.
Well, we'd have to look.
I've been hearing about it, and I don't hear anybody really talking about it.
Well, the Earth's equator goes around with the Earth as it precesses, and the 13,000 years is about right. That's half of the precessional Earth's precessional period, and that would happen any given point in the sky. That is in the swath covered by the Earth's equator will get crossed by the equator every 13,000 years.
Years.
By one side or the other. And so it may very well be that point in Sagittarius, that time is coming up. And I'd have to check and see. I don't know what the date is when the center of the galaxy, as defined, not by Sagittarius, but there is a radio.
13th constellation, actually, it is.
I'm sorry?
It's a 13th constellation that defines the center of the...
Sagittarius is?
Well, there is actually a 13th constellation that it was the... considered the center. For some reason, it's turned obsolete at this point. I don't know if it's...
Well, at any rate, the center of the galaxy is defined by a radio source that can be picked out by astronomers. And so at some point, the Earth's equator will sweep across that. Maybe that date is when it is. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. I just wonder if you might know what it would be called, if there's a name for this happening or...
No. Not that we know of.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for calling. Appreciate the call. Well, maybe somebody else has a name for it and can call in and let us know.
Or time to make one up.
Matt G. in Madison, I believe, is next. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah. I'd like to know if the moon is in the same phase wherever you are in the U.S., including Alaska, or what direction does it change phases in? And would they see that same eclipse up in Alaska that's coming up?
Yeah, the answer is first of all that the phase is independent of where you're located, because it's a matter of the angle between the sun and the moon and the Earth, and so as the Earth rotates, that doesn't change the angle between those three bodies.
Brings up another point, and that is sometimes the moon is like a slipper with its the body that shows is down, like it's sitting on a table or something.
Okay.
Sometimes it's vertical.
That's with respect to the horizon, and so that will change on any given evening when you see the moon. Let's say when you see a young crescent moon rising, it's going to be concave downward towards the horizon, and then when it crosses the meridian, which will be around sunset or a little bit in the afternoon, then it will be vertical, and then when it sets over on the other side in the west, it's going to be concave upward.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that.
So that will change with respect to the horizon.
Within 1 day's worth.
Right, as the moon
places.
Right, as the moon rises and sets, which it does once a day, just like pretty much everything else in the sky, you'll see its orientation with respect to the horizon change.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so as for Alaska, they should be able to see the eclipse as well, at least the trailing phases of it. I'm not sure how much of the time difference makes for Alaska, but they'll certainly at least see the end of the eclipse. They may very well miss the beginning of the eclipse. In fact, now that I think about it, I'm sure they'll miss the beginning of the eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Roy in Appleton next. Hi, Roy.
Hi, how are you? I'm on my way to the Bylo Planetarium right now for a presentation by a potential new director, but we are having a special program at the University of Wisconsin-Fox Valley Bylo Planetarium tonight on the eclipse. There will be a program in the planetarium at 7, and then NuSTAR, the astronomy group, will be setting up telescopes outside, and the public is invited. It should be a great opportunity for families and youth with this beautiful clear sky tonight to see the total eclipse.
That's great. And it's nice to know that there are some events. I bet you there are events around the state.
We certainly have a few in Madison. For example, at Space Place, we'll be doing a program from 6:30 until about 9, and Madison Astronomical Society is collaborating with us there. And then at Memorial High School Planetarium in Madison, they'll be doing programs, I think, at 6:30 and 7:45, I think are the times, at the planetarium, and also Madison Astronomical Society members will probably be out there with telescopes. And the other thing I can say for sure is that the astronomy department is opening up the telescope on the roof of Sterling Hall. So if you're in the campus area, you can come up there. Again, you don't need a telescope to look at a lunar eclipse, but it can be fun to do that. So there are at least those Madison-based opportunities and presumably others around the state.
Thanks, Roy.
Yeah, thank you. Have good luck with it.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. Give us a call. We've got some open lines. We'll get you on pretty fast. Pat in East Troy, you are next. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Larry. And, gentlemen, thank you so much for letting me ask my question.
Sure.
Sometime in December, I believe, I heard an expert, maybe it was you people, say that an asteroid was supposed to hit Mars at 4:36 a.m. on the 30th of January, and I never heard anything about it after that.
That's because it missed.
I sort of figured it must have, but
yeah, we might have been talking about that, but that was certainly in the news. There was a greater than usual chance that an asteroid was going to hit Mars, and the only because an asteroid is small and it's very hard to define its orbit exactly. The people who calculate those orbits with very high precision could only give a probability. And the probability was always much, much less than one. I think at its best they were estimating the odds at like 1 in 1,000 or something along that line. I don't remember the final numbers. And so in fact it did not strike Mars. But 1 in 1,000 is a lot higher than your usual chance of a sizable asteroid hitting a planet. And so that's why we were all interested, because that would have certainly been a very interesting event if it had come across. But it didn't.
Okay.
Any future warnings for asteroids coming our way?
There will definitely be one with our number on it eventually, but
thanks.
But not now, Pat. Hopefully we won't see one for a few hundred years. Marie and Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Marie.
Hi. A few months ago, one of our planets, either Pluto or Neptune, was downgraded. And I
or
never
redefined.
Heard...
Yeah.
Yeah, redefined.
And I never heard the reason why.
Well, and you want to hear it now?
Politics, sure. Jim? Was that?
Well, yeah, maybe there's politics in there. What happened was the International Astronomical Union, which is the organization of astronomers that decides on what terminology they're going to use. For example, they decided in the 1920s that there were 88 constellations in the sky, not 87 and not 89, but 88. And they divided the entire sky up into 88. So it's just a conventional sort of thing. And it's the same with the planets, really. Why do we call asteroids asteroids? They orbit around the sun as well. Why aren't they called planets? And the reason is that there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. And the first asteroids, when they were discovered in the early 1800s, were called planets. And as more and more asteroids orbiting in about the same, more and more of these bodies orbiting were found, people said, well, there's something not quite right about that.
Too many planets out there.
Whole collection of things, not something that has its own identity, but a whole collection of objects. And that's actually what happened with Pluto as well. Pluto was discovered back in 1930. And no other object was known that far from the sun. But in more recent years, we've discovered many objects out there orbiting in the general area that Pluto orbits, some of them which are bigger than Pluto. And so you have a choice. Either you start calling all of those things planets, in which case we would now be saying that there's 350 known planets in the solar system and the count is going up, or you redefine planet in such a way that an object like Pluto, which is a member of a very populated class of objects, is not a planet. And that's what happened. So they created a definition for the word planet that excluded Pluto and all of the other members of those things way out in the solar system. Now, that may change because they'll have another meeting another year or two down the road, and they might just change the definition, and it could suddenly be a planet again, although that would really confuse people, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It would. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Barbara in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hello. I'm just calling to say that in the Milwaukee area, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel does have a listing of 4 planetariums that will be open starting at 7:30 today.
Oh, cool.
7:30 p.m. And that's so that people can see that in the newspaper in their metro section or at jsonline.com.
Okay.
And they'd be the Daniel Soroff Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. The Sampson Planetarium in Wauwatosa West High School, Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee, and the Horwitz Planetarium in the Retzer Nature Center in the town of Genesee.
Well, that's excellent, and I think the question might be, do any of them have hot chocolate?
Well,
that's what I'd look for tonight.
This is just a small article they have on page 2 of their metro section, and I have been noticing in the paper a lot of the nature centers are having events scheduled around this, so if people just look in their local listings, I'm sure they might find somewhere to go and get some guidance, perhaps.
This might be the time to mention that this is our last total lunar eclipse until December 2010, which isn't all that far away, but we won't have any total lunar eclipses in the rest of this year or 09. So now would be the time
now's
to go
your,
look.
Now's your chance. Thanks, Barb.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate that very much. And let's see. Myrna in Wautoma, I think, is next. So let's go to Myrna. Hi, Myrna.
Hello. What? I just have a comment, well, maybe question, too. Earlier, a woman called up saying that she had seen a meteor flashing through. I didn't know if it was here in the Midwest and how recently she saw it.
Or it was a he, I think.
Right, it was a guy with a meteor, a woman who had seen what we think was the space station and the space shuttle.
Oh, okay. No, I thought I had heard somebody else speaking about an actual meteor. Anyway, in the news, it said that there was a meteor streak in the Pacific Northwest Tuesday morning about 5:30 their time. So that would be about, 7:30 our time? Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was powerful enough that they could see it in three states, Washington, Oregon, Idaho. Bright lights, sonic booms. Someone even reported a sonic wave later, or a shock wave later on.
Wow.
And someone said, oh, I even saw it land in Adams County in southeast Washington, but they can't find it.
Well,
but I just wondered, if they could see that in the Pacific Northwest, would there be a chance that we could have seen maybe a streak of that earlier than that, or no?
Well, yeah, if it's going the right direction and at the right altitude and all that, then that would be a long way for it to go. But it's they do cross very long distances, transcontinental distances, under the right circumstances. So a sizable enough object. Some of them, when they're really big, have been known to enter the atmosphere and then skip back out again. They don't even actually ever hit the Earth. And those can be visible over tracks for thousands of miles. So it's possible. These things happen fairly regularly. Every few weeks, there's one, at least, like the one you describe, although the vast majority of them go unobserved and unreported, except maybe by the military or somebody who's doing tracking of these things. Mm-hmm. But they can be very impressive, and that sounds like that was a good one. Sorry,
yeah,
I missed it.
They were saying that some television stations in Spokane were even getting reports as early as 5:30 that morning from three different states. So
pretty cool.
I just thought that kind of hitched on to somebody speaking earlier.
Yeah, the fellow from Wausau, I believe.
Yeah, we didn't get a date from him, so I'm not sure.
No, we didn't get a date from him, so I'm not sure. Well, Myrna, thank you very much for calling. And guys, Jim and Tom, thank you so much. UW Space Place tonight?
That's right, tonight, 6:30 till about 9.
And, otherwise,
2300 South Park Street.
Get outside, and if you can, see the moon, you're going to see the eclipse.
Yep. If you've got a window facing the right direction, turn off the lights in the house and look out there and stay warm, and you'll get a little bit of a look at it. But it's really better to go outside.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can see it from inside the house. I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to have to be outside, unfortunately. Well, Tom, thank you so much.
Great, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Tom Hall, who's an optics specialist with Eagle Optics. Jim, thank you again.
Always a pleasure.
Jim Lattice, director of the UW-Madison Space Place, our guest. And they come by every so often. We'll have them back again soon, I'm sure. I know there's more events coming up in March at UW Space Place. We'll certainly want to talk about that. And we'll get their views on what's going on in the space and talk about optics with you again. But we're going to turn our attention a little bit to biorefining and wood chemistry in the pulp and paper industry. There's lots of neat stuff going on in the area of clean energy and our forest land here in Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.